And it's time for In the Garden with Master Gardener Ed Bajarski joining us by phone from Juneau. And we want to thank the Flower Farm for supporting this program. They're located down there at 6 Rory's Road, Pathkeys Landing, open every day, 10 till 4, except Wednesday. And right now they've got vegetable starts ready to plant. Just about everything you'd probably want, zucchinis to kale to tomatoes to onions and lettuce, and lots of herbs like basil, mint, Romanesco. So they're down there at Pathkeys Landing and at their garden center in town, located behind Love and Matter. Open at the garden center Tuesday through Saturday, 10 till 5.
Well, around here in southeast Alaska, our little temperate rainforest, there are places in our yards, probably many, most, I imagine. I've been mucking around in a number of them, where there's either wet, low spots, wet spots. Some of them are just due to heavy rains, and other may be all the time moist. And some of us may be lucky enough to have ditches or even creeks flowing through where plants that like or tolerate more moisture can grow well, and try to come up with some good choices for people where they can't grow the things that really like the drier conditions. So perennials, trees, shrubs, some of which even can give us some fruit and berries we can talk about today.
Okay, that sounds good. Yeah, definitely, that is a fact of life. Boggy little spots in everybody's lawn and property, there's no getting around it.
Right. Well, there may be. I mean, you may be able to put in drains, whether it be French drains. You may be able to ditch them. You may be able to fill them up with either better soil, sand, gravel, and soil on top. But then that kind of moves the problem to some... Hopefully you have a place to drain it too, so you aren't, because suddenly the lawyers get involved if you're draining it into your neighbor's yard, and that gets painfully expensive. So you don't want to do that. So if you've got a wet spot that is out there in a place where you view it, it can be, we can make it more beautiful looking. We can put in, whether that we start from the low level, and actually looking at nature, Mother Nature can help us with that. See what grows along the streams, what grows in the edges of the muskeg ponds from the, well, look at wild iris, which grows so well out on the wetlands in places, and shooting stars, which can be started from seed. Both of those are good choices to plant because they already grow there. And then I know around Petersburg, I remember the huge clumps of the tall yellow iris, Iris pseudocorus. And again, they love that moist areas in there, and again, that can take your mind away from, oh, that's just this soggy, damp spot that it's kind of an ugly spot in the yard. I mean, moss grows fine, of course, but those are good choices to begin with. Then there's some of the primroses which are just, they're growing now but won't be blooming until a bit later, the japonicas, which are candelabras, usually in kind of rose pink to white shades, and a little later on yet, the Florende primroses, which are usually yellow to orange, bells that hang down, and both of these get to be 18 inches to 2 feet tall. The Florende are very fragrant. Again, makes for a good reason to go out there to enjoy these plants, flowers, that tolerate or enjoy or need, really, more moisture.
And is planting by seed the smart way to go, or what's the best way to get these started?
And again, talk to your neighbors, really. For some of these, yeah, the primroses, at least, are plants which grow easily from seed and or seed themselves very readily. I was in a lady's yard yesterday where she's got a damp spot, kind of shady also, and she may have gotten some of these plants from me initially, maybe 3 or 4 plants, and she now has hundreds and hundreds of little seedlings. So over the next couple of years, it's going to be a magnificent display. And, in fact, I even planted some of the same stuff down in my ditch after DOT redid the highway some years back. And, again, they flower beautifully. I have I've seen people stopping even to take pictures of them. So good choices there. Another one is a tall blooming. It's exotic. It's originally from China, as a lot of plants are. They're called ligularias, and there's three or four different varieties that have big green leaves, very often with a purplish tinge to them. Some have rounded leaves. Some have very jagged-edged leaves that just the leaves by themselves will form clumps 18 inches, 2 feet tall, and then they send up flower stalks, some that have a bright yellow daisy flower, some that have a black, almost purplish-black stems with small yellow flowers on them. And those can go up to be 5 to 6 feet tall if they have enough moisture, and again are fairly shade tolerant too. So a lot of times we'll have those two growing together. It's moist and shady. So places where we can put some different stuff in.
Hmm. And are perennials good choices here, or is it a combination? Or
exactly, yes. So the primroses, the ligularias, and the iris are perennials. You know, they come back year after year. But then think about some shrubs which also grow in those conditions, something that we can grow easily. And the red twig dogwoods. Well, there's red and yellow twig dogwoods, which can be grown, and whether you have them or a neighbor has them, they can be started easily from cuttings. Same thing as with willows. And they literally, you take the cuttings now or a little earlier or even late, even in the fall, poke a hole in that damp soil, stick them in there, and they will root themselves and grow well. So that can give you, it can give you a screen if it's, say, between you and the neighbors. It can give you some winter color. Those red and yellow twigs, branches, are very nice in the winter. But they also have good fall color. So there's another additional bit of interest in the yard. Add something that's going to give you some fruit, some high bush cranberries. Again, they're native here. And they can be propagated by cuttings also. And those, again, they have white flowers. They'll be flowering very soon here and up in Haines. Maybe less common around Petersburg, but certainly something that's not difficult to get. They have the berries. The red berries are they're strong flavored to eat them raw when we're up moose hunting. And that's something, folks go up the rivers, moose hunting, you'll see the high bush cranberries around the cottonwood trees particularly. But they make great ketchup or jelly or even juice that can then be used for other seasons of the year. And they have beautiful fall color, too.
They do. That's true. So what's a good technique for, harvesting and then replanting into the wet spots in your yard, something like a high bush cranberry?
About as easy as it gets. You know, get out your pruners, clippers, or an axe and chop out some stems. And, you know, it might be quarter inch to half inch stems. And I usually will shorten them depends on how deeply you can push them in. But with some things, if you can stick them in, poke a hole with a crowbar or a piece of rebar, a foot deep or so, and stick a stem that may be 2 to 3 feet long, and do a bunch of them, because some may not root themselves. So this gives you more to choose from, and once they do get rooted after a year, then you can move them again. There's the golden willows they're common around Juneau. They're not native here. The golden ones aren't, at least. But they, too, are very easy to root. Those I've taken 6-foot stems. People want an instant screen. Taken six feet long by an inch in diameter, and again, poke them into damp soil, and by the end of the summer, you've got the start of a screen, and again, those stems are golden yellow in the wintertime, very beautiful, and yet the leaves are they're not real large, narrow leaves, usually yellow color in the fall. So again, more color, and all of that, especially maybe you have a damp bank. The shrubs and stuff, at least, the dogwoods and the willows, can be very good at stabilizing a bank so it doesn't erode.
Right. So stabilizing a bank, and as things take root in these kind of damp, soggy spots, does that improve drainage as well? Or?
Well, essentially, yeah. And, you know, the willows, the dogwoods, and you can even plant cottonwoods as far as that goes, the same way. Take cuttings, stick them in the ground, and they pump a lot of moisture out of the ground. So you can effectively, well, you're stabilizing the ground, making it firmer, but it can also help to start drying out the ground there. And if you want to, say, especially if you've got the flowers or the high bush cranberries and other stuff, maybe you want a little better access to them. So to get out there, you could lay down strips of some landscaping fabric and then put some gravel on top of it to make a path that will get you out into that area so that you aren't sinking too deeply into the muddy, soggy ground.
Yeah, that's a good point. So if somebody wants to embark on this kind of beautification project this spring or early summer, what are some of your favorite combos of plants in a couple of different ranges of shadiness?
Sure. So I mentioned some of the different plants. So as far as shady conditions, we mentioned the couple of primroses and the ligularias. Both of those like or tolerate shaded conditions, as long as they're moist, where the irises generally want the more full sun, or shooting stars. Again, something else out on the wet meadows that you can collect seeds. Those are things that grow in the more full sun areas. And again, as far as the shrubbery goes, both the dogwoods and the high bush cranberries are commonly found either at the edges of the wet forests. The high bush cranberries, even underneath in and among the cottonwoods, up along, if you go up the Stikine River or some of the other rivers for here, up the Chilkoot and Chilkat rivers, we see them lots, quite thickly up there. However, what happens, the amount of sun they get does affect how they grow, but also how much color they have. With the shrubbery, at least, the more sun they get, the better the color of the stems will be, the better the fall color will be. And for the high bush cranberries, the better, well, I can't say that they ever are very sweet, but still, that it gives them more, a little bit more sugar in the berries. So kind of like with our wild blueberries, which are not really that moisture tolerant, they want to be on better drained areas. But if they get more sun, then the blueberries and huckleberries are sweeter compared to those that are growing quite nicely in the shade, but just don't have quite as much sugar. So that affects maybe how you use them or where you would plant some of these.
That's a good point, that if you are going to be doing the cranberries and you want to harvest the fruit and get a maximum enjoyment out of it, look for a spot that just has a bit more sunlight.
Yes, exactly. And if you have an area that usually if it's on your own property, it's hard to do this if it's on public land, Forest Service land or whatever. But you can improve those patches somewhat by pruning out the things that are not the blueberries and huckleberries, by pruning out the rusty manzisii, or if there's, you know, small spruces and hemlocks and such coming up in and among them, maybe those can be pruned out also, to essentially let the blueberries grow better.
Right. That makes sense. That's a good idea.
And there's another berry that many of us are growing. I mean, the currants. So when you're thinking about the different berry bushes that we might grow, the currants and the gooseberries tend to be more tolerant of the part shade areas and more moist areas compared to, say, raspberries or cherries or apple trees. So again, you may see this in the forest too, where we've got several species of wild currants growing here, the stink currants, and then some of the more trailing currants too, that will grow in quite damp conditions that may do well. And then I suppose I'll throw out what might be a strange one that can be kind of painful to plant or transplant, but that does grow in the shady conditions and rather moist, like moist drainages and that sort of thing in the forest. And that's the devil's club. which, again, there are definitely painful to transplant. You have to suit up with your full leather or heavy-duty rain gear and leather gloves and all of that. And the transplanting is not easy also because you need to find small plants that the big ones don't transplant well. We've tried it with an excavator digging up the whole plant, and they're not easy at all. So you want small plants that are maybe only a foot tall or so to move, whether they be seedlings, again, along the edge of the forest or something like that, or in the forest. They might be growing from seed. Sometimes they will root where the branches touch down, and then you'll see a little shoot coming up. Again, if you can kind of pull up on that to see if they have roots underneath them, then you can cut them off and move those. But again, and they are, as long as you don't have to brush into them or, you know, sliding down the mountain with a deer on your back and you're debating before you go over the cliff, do I grab onto the devil's club, which is going to be more painful here.
Right.
scenario. And many of us have done that. Or, you know, you get the, so you're picking devil's club spines out of your hands and your knees for days at or weeks afterwards.
Yeah.
But still, they're a beautiful plant. And as long as they're at the back edge, again, at the edge of the forest, at the edge of your yard, they are moisture tolerant. And big, beautiful leaves, the clusters of the berries are ornamental, and they've got really nice, bright yellow fall color. Devil's Club are a great structural element in the landscape.
And highly medicinal in a variety of ways. I barely even know the tip of the iceberg of, but there's a workshop of medicinal plant harvesting in Petersburg this weekend, and I'm sure Devil's Club will be a subject there. I know that the new buds, the little furry sprouts at the beginning of spring are kind of delicious. You can make pesto out of those.
Yep. I've eaten them, too. Just snap them off and eat them straight right there in the as they're growing, although mine are now too large for that, but you'd have to go up to a higher elevation, and you could get them at that stage. So it's all about timing. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I've had and used some Devil's Club salve or oil to rub on aching knees and shoulders and that sort of thing, too. So, and there's lots of medicinal uses that hopefully folks will learn how to use that. And, again, that's where harvesting of these, it's important to either get permission from, if they're on private land, to harvest some of this stuff.
What would be the good method to transplant in a Devil's Club plant if you wanted to? Like, how much of the roots do you want to bring with you?
That was the challenge where we tried with some big plants. We actually wanted to the idea was it was going to be a barrier from people going through an area, which, as you can imagine, would work.
It would work, yeah. And
we tried this with an excavator first, digging it up. And what we found was that the Devil's Club plant tends to have just one or two very large and long roots going out. Very difficult to get those, to dig them up carefully. And so that's where I found that when here and there I'll find sometimes, I suppose the birds eat the fruits, drop the seeds, and then they sprout around the edges of my garden in some of the beds I have had or have noticed, or I mention these to other folks where I see them in their yard, and usually they say, oh, yeah, help yourself, please, dig it out, take it away from us. So small plants is the key, and I know there's been work, and I'm going to try again. There's been a lot of work on the propagating. I've got seeds planted from last fall. They say those may take a couple of years to germinate and beyond, although I guess if they go through a bear first, then they germinate more easily. We'll see what they do from seeds. And then there's other folks working on growing them from cuttings. And that's another thing. I tried that last year, didn't have any apparent success, but I'm going to try again with some of the new green shoots coming out. And probably wait another couple of weeks yet and take some of those using rooting hormone, try to root them also. So the propagation tends to be slow. And, again, just kind of keep your eyes open if you're looking for some on your hikes in the forest and that sort of thing where there might be small plants growing.
Mm. Well, one thought that just flashed across my mind as sort of an alarm was that sometimes a new or a small Devil's Club, there's a slight resemblance to a new cow parsnip, or like a wild celery, as it's horribly nicknamed around here.
Okay.
Which is like the worst plant in the world, in my opinion. I just loathe that plant.
Yeah.
That's not a good neighborly thing to bring into the area.
Well, no. We don't want to be planting. I don't know of anybody who would deliberately do cow parsnip plantings. No. I know some folks. I'm not, luckily. Luckily, I am not one of those so sensitive. It sounds like you are. I know other folks who are also very sensitive to them. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, so that's where looking at them carefully to see what they are sprouting. And you're right about their resemblance, especially as a little plant. Mm-hmm. Once they've grown a year or two so that they've got a woody stem on the Devil's Club, then it's pretty obvious. You've got the spines on them also. That's a pretty good indication, although, you know, the cow parsnip kind of has the stiff hairs, which are the irritating part, too. So, yeah, caution, I suppose, is needed by folks who know they are sensitive to that if they're going to be digging.
Hmm. Yeah, that's true. Well,
so bottom line, again, as with so much stuff, you know, some education and knowledge and, you know, whether you may not be carrying your magnifying glass out there in the forest with you, but still, if you're thinking, that's something to think about when you're looking for plants, that you're choosing the right ones in the right places and not the wrong ones.
Yeah, definitely. I like this idea, though, of, you know, selecting well-suited plants to the conditions that you're trying to kind of remedy in your own lawn or on your property by kind of, yeah, following the lead from Mother Nature, who does quite a good job of growing plants in this climate.
Right. Well, and yeah, Mother Nature is, they may strew the seeds widely. I mean, I'm looking at, out here in my yard, I'm looking at the alders, which, of course, will grow just fine on my driveway if I quit driving on it anymore. or the dandelions, which will float in on the breeze, or fireweed, too. So if there's any bare soil, they will colonize it. We know that. So that's where looking at where they grow the best. Dandelions don't do very well in the shade. They want the sun and all of that sort of thing. Same thing with the fireweed, are not shade tolerant. They are usually on newly exposed soil where they hit the ground and start to grow vigorously. Where then I look at the buttercups here, and they'll grow just about anywhere. And they grow not as well in the shady areas, but they certainly will continue to grow. So, yeah, learn from what's growing around you and look at your neighbor's properties, what, you know, on your walks or your hikes and all that sort of thing. See what is growing where. And if you see some plants and hopefully a gardener in the yard, and stop and talk to them and ask them, well, what is that growing, that beautiful flowering plant or whatever, and how do you grow it, and, you know, is it difficult or easy to grow? And you express an interest, and very often that, you know, the homeowner or the gardener might say, well, yeah, it does really well here and in a shady or in a wet spot or whatever, and maybe they'll offer you some of it.
True. It's a good way to make friends. You know, people love the little worlds they create that way.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Right. Right. They call it pass-along plants. Mm-hmm. And I'll throw out just at least the warning that you should ask, okay, well, how fast does it spread? Is it going to take over the world, or is it going to take over my yard in 2 or 3 years, too? So, or is it better behaved? You know, does it grow well? Does it play well and grow well with others, or will it choke out something else that might be more choice, too? So, again, think about that when you're moving plants, when you're getting new plants. How well might they do? Do I have the best yard ever for? Yeah, the thing about something like Japanese knotweed, which I know there's huge patches here and in Petersburg, mm-hmm. That will definitely take over if given even you turn away for a few minutes and away they go.
Mm. Yeah, very malignant plant.
Yeah, they do stabilize those banks and stuff out there. I remember seeing the big patches out along the highway. But to the detriment of everything else, and there's nothing that eats Japanese knotweed. So that's the other issue. You know, they don't really provide good habitat for our local wildlife, birds, that sort of thing either. So be careful of what you're planting, I guess, bottom line.
Yeah, definitely. I like this whole idea, though, of like looking out at your property, looking out at your lawn, seeing a trouble spot, and not having to just be unhappy with it. You can strike up a plan and start hatching a vision for a whole year-round beautiful transformation that can take place there. And it's fun, it's well worth doing, and there's lots of ways to approach it.
Yep, definitely.
All right. Well, that's a great place to leave it off. And thank you so much, Ed, for this great idea. And we'll check in with you again next week. And, yeah, hope you have a great week and maybe even some sunny days somewhere in between.
Yeah, we can hope. I hope so.
Yeah. All right. Well, happy gardening.
All right. Thanks, Orin.
Okay. Bye-bye. That was another installation of In the Garden with Master Gardener Ed Bajarski. Hope you enjoyed. It's always enlightening to hear from Ed. He's got so much knowledge about growing plants in this region. And we want to thank the Flower Farm for helping underwrite this program. They've got vegetable starts ready to plant out there at the Flower Farm and the Garden Center. Just about everything you'd want. Zucchini, squash, cabbage, lettuce, broccoli, tomatoes, basil, parsley, and more herbs at the Flower Farm. They're open every day, 10 till 4, except Wednesday. They're at 6 Rory's Road, Papke's Landing. And they're open Tuesday through Saturday, 10 to 5, at the Garden Center downtown, located behind Love and Matters. All right. Until next week, that was In the Garden. With eggs, you can eat them with gravy, eat them with beans, pinto or navy, put them on a side, put them in the middle, put a homegrown tomato on a hot cake griddle. Homegrown tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes, what'll life be without homegrown tomatoes? Only two things that money can't buy, and that's true love and homegrown tomatoes. Life I lead, well, I'd be Johnny Tomato Seed, 'cause I know what this country needs. It's homegrown tomatoes in every yard you see. When I die, don't bury me in a box in a cemetery.